welcome back to AA Opera Podcast. Wait for it. Episode 99.
Do you know what? I feel like our listeners are just so keen for us to get to episode 100 so that these like introductions of 95... 96, 97, 98, 99 is gonna actually stop. But it'll all start again when we get to 101. No. Just guys, please bear with us on the excitement because next week it's a big week. But let's stick with this one for now. Avi, how are you doing?
I'm okay. Not much to report, to be honest with you. Same old, same old. I had a lovely chat with a friend this week about how difficult the winter months are for advancing opera singers. Like, if you haven't... If you're in school, there's things to do. If you're, up there, there's things to do. Mm-hmm. If you're in the middle, there's nothing to do. January, February, March, and partially April.
That's true. The only company that comes to mind, and is one company, is I think English Touring Opera started their season at Hackney Empire this week, which we had several friends of the podcast involved in, actually, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We had a lot of friends in it. Still, there is like a dead period in this industry, but... Like, it is really aggravating when you're like, well, what about the winter months? Like, you have the summer, and then you can have stuff in December and November because there's, like, the holiday season, and it's auditions, and it's, like, there's noise. But then January is, like, dry January.
It is a dry January. No, it's totally valid what you're saying. Like,
it was just an interesting conversation. But... What about you? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Like, similar. Like, not an awful lot to report. I think we're just in that, like, limbo stage of just waiting for, A, the better weather, because you know me. I'm not accepting that there's snow outside right now.
It is very confusing.
But, yeah, just the same old, same old, same old.
Same, same. New name. Do you remember that commercial? Did you guys have that commercial here?
No, I don't think so. What was it for?
Did you guys switch? Oh, because you don't have Fuse Tea / Nest Tea.
No.
So there's this huge thing about 15 years ago where they switched the branding for like this iced tea, bottled iced tea that they... sell in Israel, and the commercial was same same new name. Same same
new it's name. Catchy
same same
I like it. I'll note that down new name. For marketing purposes, yeah.
Anyway, who do we have on this week?
We have the delightful chorus director of Glyndebourne Opera, Aidan Oliver. We had such a great time talking to Aidan about all things chorus, and we related obviously to that. As you guys all know, we had such a great summer in the chorus at Opera Holland Park last year, but it was really nice to hear more about Glyndebourne and Aidan's work as a conductor all around. And I think you'll really enjoy this episode, so take it away. Aidan, hello, a very warm welcome to AA Opera Podcast. Would you like to start off by introducing yourself to our listeners?
Hello, I'm Aidan Oliver. I have the very great pleasure of being the chorus director for Glyndebourne Opera.
Amazing. Aidan, can you take us back and share with us what your first experience of opera was?
So my original musical education was as a chorister, a cathedral chorister at Westminster Cathedral in London. I think we did get taken occasionally to opera performances, but my first really vivid memory of this world outside the cloistered world of cathedral music was when a little group of four of us were invited by George Schulte to take part in performances of Berlioz's Damnation of Faust with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and we did performances in the Proms in London and then the Salzburg Festival in Austria. Strictly speaking, it wasn't staged, it wasn't an opera production, and Damnation of Faust isn't strictly speaking an opera, but it was my first kind of dive into this big sound world, you know, thrilling high octane chorus and orchestra, big solos, big occasions, and a rapturous audience. And that was a really thrilling experience for me. I remember it vividly, and I think that's when I realised there's a world out there beyond Palestrina and Victoria and so on, much as I loved that at the time.
Yeah, you say dive. I think that's a deep dive into that.
It's not like a foray into it. It's like a hello, welcome. Yeah,
very much so.
Yeah, and I imagine such an inspiring experience as a young boy as well. From that, was it always a career in music that you looked to? And specifically, how did you get into conducting?
I was always heavily involved in music. I went from Westminster Cathedral as a music scholar to Eton and then to Cambridge, a choral scholar at King's College, Cambridge. But actually, no, I wasn't ever kind of sure from an early age that I wanted to go into music as a career. Even when I left Cambridge, I still wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. I dabbled in academia and went to a couple other universities after that. And I only incrementally found my way there. So at school, I'd always put on little groups, a little close harmony group and so on. At Cambridge, I conducted the Second University Symphony Orchestra, lots of college music making. I put on concerts with choirs and so on. But I never went to conservatoire or music college. I never had formal conducting training. And it was only gradually that I kind of fell eventually properly into it. I got a church job in London, a church in Westminster. I think that was when I thought, okay, this is now what I'm doing. So it all went from there.
That's an interesting discussion to have, really, especially on this podcast, about university education versus conservatoire education, and how did you find Cambridge as a place to nurture your musical output in those choirs that you mentioned? But what do you think the benefits are of having a strong academic background in a career such as this?
Two different really questions really. Cambridge is brilliant for getting experience on the job, being able to make loads of mistakes, but also opportunity to just stand up and direct groups of all kinds, and so many opportunities from little college concerts to actually quite big opportunities. As a singer, I was in the choir at King's College, Cambridge. We did international tours and recordings and TV and so on. So one was always exposed day to day to audiences. So that was really valuable. Not so valuable for the kind of technical training that a conductor needs, but it's nevertheless a really good grounding. As to the academic background, for me, that's been terrifically useful. I didn't actually I didn't read music as a degree at Cambridge. I actually did classics, Latin and Greek and all the associated things, which was a really good grounding. It's a very, very broad humanities-based degree, lots of languages, history, philosophy and so on. And in my work as a chorus director of all kinds, being able to expound to people, to make connections between very different cultural worlds, to work very fluently in languages, to be able to speak, I hope, fluently and compellingly about music to people. That's all. I would trace all that back to my university education and previously before that. So it can be terrific. Though, having said that, I would, if I had my time again, I would have loved from Cambridge to go direct to a proper conducting degree at Music College to really forge at an earlier stage the skills that I now draw on all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's always interesting to hear how people experience music through university and their upbringing and then like the decisions that they would have made in retrospect, because retrospect is a lovely thing.
Yeah, I'm, je ne regrette rien. I have no regrets at all, but it's, you know, one takes different pathways and I'm delighted where I've ended up now.
Yeah. So you have an extensive portfolio of work conducting in many settings. What's unique about conducting an opera chorus?
Yeah, good question. I think when you work with any vocal group of any kind, from the smallest little church choir to the biggest symphonic chorus and opera chorus, there are some fundamentals that don't change. The old-fashioned virtues of rhythmic vitality, you know, engagement with a text, projection, tuning, blend, all those things, they apply to any group of any kind. But there are very specific things about working with an opera chorus. One is the whole thing about language. We're working constantly in many different languages, often kind of simultaneously as we're rehearsing different productions, and we need to engage in a very, very detailed, nuanced and intensive way with the text, because we're going to be selling a story, characters, a whole world that depends on the text we're projecting. So that's one thing. Then there's the memorization thing. It is a huge part of the work with an opera chorus, particularly in my job preparing choruses. I think in 20 years' time we'll be able to, you know, Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, you know, is able to upload to his brain a whole instruction manual for a helicopter and fly it within a minute. One day we'll be able to, you know, just upload the score of La Traviata into, you know, opera chorus's brains directly, and my work will be a lot easier. But we haven't got there yet.
So, I don't know if I want to get there.
Yeah, maybe not. But, you know, a huge amount of work needs to go into just rote learning of text and music and getting it as fluent as we can, so that the chorus can then go into the production studio and feel confident and ready to give it their best. So that's another thing. I would also say the trajectory of preparation is different with a kind of concert choir or any kind of ensemble that is just preparing for concert performance. Your work is kind of done once you get to the orchestral rehearsals and the concert, you know, bing, bang, bang, we perform now. But my work, I work with the chorus for 2-3 weeks for us to learn the music, but that's only the start of the process. Then they go into the production studio, there's blocking, there's movement, there's choreography, then they get on stage and there's the orchestra get involved. And sometimes the music preparation takes a little bit of a back seat, things kind of sit back a little bit while other things are put in place, but then we bring the musical detail back in, and knowing when to make my interventions and tweak things musically during that process is a very interesting part of my job. So the whole trajectory is very different. And even once a production opens, my work is still not done. We're always trying to refine for the next performance and tinker with things as we go along. So it's a little bit different than just preparing for one concert. I would say those are the main differences, the main specialisms in opera work.
Very good. Very exciting. And as you mentioned at the beginning, you are currently the chorus master at Glyndebourne. Can you tell us about your work here and what has been your most memorable moment so far with working with the Glyndebourne Chorus?
Thank you. So the structure of the Glyndebourne year is there's the Summer Festival at Glyndebourne, performances from May through to August. Usually there are 6 productions over the course of the summer, of which the chorus take part in 5 of them. Then there is an autumn season, more performances, more productions at Glyndebourne and concerts, but also usually in most years, a tour to venues around the country. So over the course of the year, for about 9 months a year, it's my job to supervise the preparation and performance of the chorus in whatever they are involved with, all those productions, as well as concerts and workshops and anything else that they are involved with. And as well as making sure that the chorus performs its best, I also see my role as making sure the experience of the chorus members is as enjoyable and rewarding and fulfilling as it can be as well. I think that's very important. So it's a kind of two-part symbiotic thing that I do with them. Most rewarding, most memorable, well, maybe not the most memorable moment, but certainly last year's production of Dame Ethel Smythe's opera, The Wreckers, was something that none of us who are involved with it will ever forget. The resurrection of this opera from the beginning of the 20th century by this firebrand suffragette, extraordinary character, Dame Ethel Smythe. An opera that had been known about and had been done, but never kind of in its original form, in its original language, by a big international kind of opera company. And it was a sensation. It turned out to be just an absolute rocket of a piece with a chorus right at the beating heart of it. Really epic, thrilling chorus writing, which they loved singing. And in the production by Melly Still, which had them as a kind of very, very physically involved chorus, it was intense but fantastic. And when we got to the first night and realised we really had a winner on our hands, it was a really fulfilling and wonderful thing to be involved with. So that would be my number one takeaway.
Yeah. Am I right in thinking as well? Did you do a performance at the Royal Albert Hall with that?
I did, exactly.
I was just going to say I was the one, I went to that one.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it was great to be running around the Albert Hall stage doing their stuff in this big, big space. Yeah, it was great. It was really...
We had a few friends in the chorus at for the Wreckers. It was an incredible size chorus too. Like, not often do you have 52 people in a chorus.
Yeah, it was huge, and the sound they made. God, I mean, even after the 10th, 11th performance, I was still getting the hairs on the back of my neck at some of the climaxes. It was people were really knocked sideways by the sheer weight of sound. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was amazing. So what is the role of a chorus master within a role of a production team?
Yeah, that's a good question. First and foremost, my role is always to look after the musical delivery of the chorus at any point, working, of course, closely with the conductor. But that intersects with a lot of elements of the production, minute-by-minute decisions and choices that have to be, or day-by-day choices that have to be made about how they work on stage. Even months before we get into the production studio, I might well be in contact with the director because we need to sort out which kind of subgroup of the chorus do particular sections and who sings what, and also you have to talk to the costumes people because they need to know months in advance exactly who's taking which kind of sections of the chorus. You know, might be a group of soldiers that we need to cast and so on. And I might need to advise the director on, you know, if he or she wants people who are particularly comfortable with doing, you know, lots of very physical action and so on. They need to know who'd be comfortable doing that and good at it and so on. And then the director might have questions about, you know, well, ideally I'd like 10 people to sing, you know, kind of hanging upside down by their toenails. Is that going to work? And I have to say, well, you know what, let's try it and see. Or actually, do you know what, we might need to think again about that. That kind of thing. And then there are always issues of blocking and staging, people too far back on the stage. I need to say, actually, that's not going to work for the balance. Can we look at you know, bringing them forward and so on? So it's a constant dialogue with the director and the might be a movement director or choreographer as well. And I really enjoy getting involved with that. Some chorus masters, I think, with movements, they say, no, that's I'm not going to get involved with that. That's for someone else. But I really love, I've found I've got quite a gift for translating what choreographers or movement directors want into terms that the chorus singers can really latch onto in a very kind of specific way, because choreographers don't always think in the same kind of score related way when they're trying to describe what they want. And sometimes I only say, well, okay, chorus, I think what we're doing is hands up on the third beat, and then the jester is on the second beat or whatever, and to make that work. And we had great fun last summer with Laurent Pelly developing this crazy opera, Les Mamelles de Tiresias, which had a lot of very stylish, very detailed choreography for the little chorus, and I really enjoyed working with him to make it happen. I think he was really thrilled to have a chorus director who was happy to get my hands dirty and get involved with that. So yeah, it's a quite a I'm somewhere between a kind of UN peacekeeper and a troubleshooter when it's in the rehearsal room, but it's a lovely process when it works.
That's really interesting to hear that it's obviously a collaborative process, but your job does not end when they leave the rehearsal room with you 2-3 weeks into the process.
No, very much not. No, things flow through me, I would say.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier that you work quite intensely with Glyndebourne for 9 months of the year. Can you share with us anything that we can look forward to this year from Glyndebourne?
Yeah, absolutely. Every season at Glyndebourne is special, but this one we're particularly excited about, and particularly excited about things involving the chorus. So we have a long-awaited and very much anticipated production, a new production of Francis Poulenc's Le Dialogue de Carmelite, Dialogue of the Carmelites, by the legendary director Barry Kosky. And this was a production that should have happened in 2020, but was delayed by the pandemic, sadly, but is finally going to see the light of day, and now follows hard on the heels of that wonderful Poulenc double bill from last year, Laurent Pelly. So there's a nice synergy to that, and that's, we've got a big chorus, and there's it's a ravishing, very powerful score which Robin Ticciato conducts, and I think it's going to be sensational. We also have Handel Semele, again, a new production directed by Adal Thomas, and the chorus, I know, are going to be front and centre, very, very physically active, very involved production for them. Again, great chorus writing. In some ways, we hope this will be a follow-up to the very acclaimed production of Handel Saul from a few years ago by Barry Kosky, similarly kind of active for the chorus. So we hope this is going to be a real sensation as well. And I should mention a new production of Don Giovanni, directed by the brilliant director Mariam Clément, who previously directed Don Pasquale and Il Turco in Italia. Brilliant productions. And so we're looking forward to seeing what she does with Mozart's great score, Don Giovanni. So some real highlights. And as if that wasn't enough, the return of the Rex Progress in the legendary production by John Cox, with designs by David Hockney. So much.
That's
to look
a great production,
to.
The Rakes Project one.
Yeah, it's terrific. People love it every single time.
And you can't say that Glyndebourne's just a summer festival, can you? Because you're busy all year, and I think it's important to stress that, because Glyndebourne is known for their wonderful summer festival, but the fact that you can catch them in the autumn and on tour as well is great.
Very much so. Not only the tour and the summer festival, there's a youth opera program that runs throughout the year. There's a very, very active learning engagement department who are working with schools and young singers and all kinds of other groups as well. And there's also now a streaming service online, Glyndebourne Encore, where people can catch up on and watch and download productions. That's a very exciting development as well.
Very interesting. It's amazing to see what opera companies are doing now, in addition to the main stage productions. But in addition to Glyndebourne, you are also the founding director of Philharmonia Voices, which, according to the Sunday Times, is a spectacularly good choir. Can you tell us more about how this choir came about?
So yes, that's one of the other kind of irons in my fire. I also direct the Edinburgh Festival Chorus, which we can talk about later. But Philharmonia Voices is an ad hoc professional choir that works with the Philharmonia on selected projects. It's not a year-round thing by any means. But essentially, it's coming out for 20 years ago now, I think it was 2004, they were going to put on a concert of Bach's B minor Mass, directed by the pianist Andras Schiff, and they didn't want to do it with the kind of one of the big non-professional amateur symphonic choruses. They wanted something much more agile and smaller, but equally they'd not had a great experience working with kind of established professional choirs who would just always use the same group of people regardless of what the project was. So David Welton, who was the director of the Philharmonia, he happened to have an assistant on his staff who had known me at Cambridge, and he said, you know, do you think Aidan might be able to pull together a group of kind of young, keen, professional singers just for this project? And I did, and it went very well, and the next year we did Haydn's Creation. And it snowballed from there. Once Esa-Pekka Salonen took over as the principal conductor of the Philharmonia, we collaborated on all kinds of things. We started with Stravinsky's Oedipus Rex with a really strong male voice chorus. I think that's what that Sunday Times review referred to. And we went on and did all kinds of operatic semi-stagings. L'Enfant, Les Sortilèges, Tristan and Isolde, Dalla Piccola, Il Prigioniero, as well as lots of symphonic music, Mahler symphonies, Schoenberg Gurulieder with huge chorus that I pulled together from music colleges and professional singers and so on. So yeah, it's been, if I fell under a bus today, I'd be particularly proud of all the things over the years that the Philharmonia have done with Philharmonia Voices. It's been a terrific ride.
Fantastic. Would you like to share a little bit about your work with the Edinburgh Festival as well?
Absolutely. So this year will be my fifth and, in fact, final year working with the wonderful Edinburgh Festival Chorus. This is a very high-calibre amateur chorus whose raison d'etre is to sing for several concerts in the Edinburgh International Festival each August. That's what they exist for. But they rehearse over about 6 months of the year, earlier in the year, and getting it all ready, and then they come back together for the festival in August. So I do a lot of travelling up and down to Scotland, to Edinburgh, and also they have a little contingent in Glasgow, and we prepare all these fabulous, big symphonic works. So last year we did Carmina Burana, Glagolitic Mass, Dream of Gerontius, Mahler 3, we were supposed to do Beethoven Choral Symphony as well, that got cancelled, but that's the kind of, you know, full fat repertoire, and they do it all in the space of 3 weeks with big name international conductors and orchestras who are visiting the festival. So that's a nice complement to my work with Glyndebourne. Different kind of group, different kind of repertoire, but equally exciting. I'm sadly have to give it up now because it's the travelling up and down is not quite sustainable in the long term, sadly. But it's been a terrific experience. They're a wonderful chorus.
That sounds great. We'd like to ask now, as singers ourselves, what skills do you look for in a singer when they are auditioning for a choir or opera chorus?
Yeah, well, it very, very much depends on what kind of group they're auditioning for. So for Philharmonia Voices, which is a ad hoc group preparing for specific projects in a short space of time, I have to place a very high premium on sight reading and musicianship, people who can pick up a score and really and run with it very, very, get up speed very, very quickly. With the Edinburgh Festival Chorus, which is an amateur group, not so much, because we have a much longer rehearsal period and I teach them the music. We're looking for people with just a good, not necessarily highly trained, but good choral voice, who are going to blend and be able to pick up music kind of by ear to a certain extent, but with some experience of choral singing. For people auditioning a Glyndebourne opera chorus, is very, very different. Again, not necessarily people who have a great deal of sight reading ability or anything, but we're looking for fabulous voices, really high quality operatic trained voices. Not necessarily yet fully formed. They may be people who are still developing as artists and singers, but who have that certain something, that certain quality in the voice that we're looking for, an exciting sound. And they also need to be people who have tremendous stage presence. People are going to occupy a stage that directors will love working with, people who instinctively can project emotion and drama in a very natural and compelling way. So that's what we look for with those who are coming to us to try and sing in the Glyndebourne chorus.
It's a lot to think about.
Right.
And it's interesting also as young singers to always think about what auditions you go to and hearing like for a choir versus for a chorus, how different your voice and how different your audition can be and what the perception on the other side is and like what they're looking for and how just because you didn't get an audition, that doesn't mean that you're not talented. It's just not what they're looking for. That's always really important to remember.
Very much so. I couldn't agree with that more. It's a part of the business of being an opera singer and moving into the profession and developing careers is auditioning for all kinds of things. One has to be a little bit canny about what you put yourself forward for, but also brave and knowing what your strengths are, what you can offer to particular groups, to particular companies, and what might be a good fit. It's a fascinating business, auditioning. It really is, and of course you can't take everybody. You know, lots of people don't get selected. We hear hundreds of people for Glyndebourne Chorus and can only take it depends, but between about 30 and 50 new people get involved from year to year. Maybe even less than that, actually. But it doesn't mean that those who didn't get selected don't have a great deal to offer and fabulous careers ahead of them. It's just part of the business.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. So, different question, maybe a bit of a curveball. But what is your favorite operatic chorus number and why?
Oh, well, gosh, where do we start? Well, if you're going to hold a gun to my head, for pure visceral operatic high octane thrill, the opening scene of Verdi's Otello is remarkable. It just makes me, again, the hairs on the back of their head. This, for those who don't know, this is they're standing on the harbour side. It's the storm raging. Otello's ship is returning from his battle against the Turks, and they can see the ship pitching and plunging in the waves, and there's lightning and cannon fires and trumpets, and the orchestral writing is phenomenal, but it also harnesses the power, full power of the chorus in full cry. The whole gamut of emotions, awe, fear, anxiety, drama, desperation, despair, and then finally exultant, ecstatic victory. They cry, Vittoria, Vittoria, as his ship comes safely to home. And it is opera at its very, very best, but with the chorus absolutely front and centre. It's incredibly exciting.
My parents always talk about when they saw it at, so the Israeli opera used to do a production at Caesarea, which is like the Acropolis, but also on the beach. And they did Othello, but they had the ships coming in from the sea, like from the Mediterranean behind. And my dad always is like, that was the best thing we've seen.
I should tell you, my favorite ever job in opera I did was playing the organ in that production at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, because the organ part at the beginning of Othello consists simply of putting your foot down on the bottom two notes, pedal notes of the organ, and just holding it there for about 5 minutes while this all goes on. And you don't have to play anything else. Anyone could do this job. You just sit there with your foot on it, and it's marked PPPP, I think, in the score. And all it does is create this incredible kind of subterranean rumble of the kind of storm swell under all this orchestral activity. And I'm ashamed to say you get paid, because you're a solo instrumentalist, you get paid as much as the kind of, you know, principal trumpet who's playing their socks off. I'm deeply ashamed, but it was the best job I ever did.
It's like Ron Atkinson, Mr. Bean, at the beginning of the 2012 Olympics playing the Chariots of Fire, just going.
Oh, great. So as we round off the podcast, Aidan, have you got any exciting projects coming up that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I suppose the highlight of my year outside Glyndebourne is going to be my final season with the Edinburgh Festival Chorus, the final festival. I can't really reveal the repertoire we're doing, but it's all terrific repertoire, wonderful. And I'm particularly looking forward to working with Simon Rattle for the first time, and with him and the London Symphony Chorus on a great programme. So that's going to be a real milestone, a real thrill for me. So yeah, that's probably my big thing this year.
Very exciting. And is there anywhere people can follow you online to hear what you're up to?
Yeah, I have a Twitter feed, if I can bore your senseless there. And I have a website, which you can easily find. Just Google me. And I'm quite often pop up on Glyndebourne social media as well, talking about productions and things that we're doing. So, you'll see me around and about.
Fantastic. Now, just before we let you go, we'd just like to pick your brains and ask if you could give any advice to emerging artists looking for work within a choir or a chorus.
I would say that for those who, all the people who come to us in the Glyndebourne Chorus are all people who've trained as soloists and want to have a solo career and to be soloists, but please do not underestimate the value of singing in an opera chorus and learning the craft that way and adding that string to your bow. The value you can get of being in an opera chorus in the room with established artists, wonderful solo artists, but also the conductors, the directors, the choreographers, there is so much to learn just by that process of taking part in a chorus and following the production through. So I would seek out opportunities. There are lots of, it doesn't have to be Glyndebourne, there are lots of smaller opera companies in the summer and around, touring companies as well, who are looking for good young singers to sing in their choruses. And it's a great way to learn. And you can also, through that route, bring yourself to attention, and you pick up small cover roles and little principal roles as well. So it's a really good route, and I would do your research and find out what's out there.
Thank you so much. That is actually really good advice. Keep your eyes peeled, basically. But thank you so much for being here and talking to us. This has been incredible. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
This week's question is, what is your favourite part about the audition process? Avi.
Ha. It sounds like it's a really tough question because you have to trick your brain to think that everything is positive. But actually, there is something really nice about auditioning because there's the hope that you're going to get something on the other side. So, and I also do like having a reason to sing in front of people.
Yeah.
It's like nice. And then you get a treat at the end because you deserve it, because you're worth it.
Is that these Maybelline adverts or these makeup ads still targeting you?
Oh my goodness.
Maybe it's Maybelline. Cause
I think it's L'Oreal because you're worth it.
Yeah, L'Oreal's because you're worth it. And the Maybelline ones, maybe it's Maybelline.
What about you? What's your favorite part of auditioning?
Oh, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think it is, it's like if I had to pick, let me pick one. I think it's that immediate feeling after the audition, because no matter how the audition went, you've got to reward yourself for just showing up. Because if you've just showed up, then you've put yourself in the line for an opportunity. And I think sometimes, you know, it can be quite hard to get your head around an audition. And if you go and you do your best, then it's a win. So it's that feeling when you walk out of the room, and it's always just a blur, isn't it? But there's that feeling of relief and just a little glimmer of being proud of yourself, I think.
Yeah. I remember after my audition for the Royal Northern College of Music, RNCM, there was someone that I was... You know, there's always like at... You can very easily at audition for conservatoire, like find a group to hang out with.
Yeah.
So the group that I was hanging out with, one of the guys was like, so how'd the audition go when I was done with my second round? And I said, I think it went well, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, we can always do a post-mortem, but you never really know. It's like, it's a good point. You can always do a post-mortem.
Yeah, you never really know. And something that I would say is that how an audition went, you always think in the most accurate way of how it went when you step out of the room, and it's those first 2 minutes of just reflecting on what had just happened. I personally find that a couple of hours later, whilst I'm lying in bed in the evening and I'm like processing through the audition again, I start to think that, oh, I should have done this. Whoa, maybe that didn't come across well. But you just start to overthink it. It's like, it's that initial few minutes after the audition, that's the best time to do the post-mortem.
Yeah, but it's also good to not do it. Just forget about it.
Yeah, if you can, if you can.
If you can. And that is it for episode 99. Sorry, I have to do it twice. I caught Ashley off guard. She's now laughing a little too hard. Episode 99 of AA Opera Podcast. Thank you so much, Aiden, for coming and joining us this week and discussing all Glyndebourne chorus and auditions with us.
Yes, and if you guys really enjoyed the podcast, then please make sure that you subscribe and rate this podcast. If you head over to social media, we are AA Opera everywhere. And if you would like to support the podcast, then you can always buy us a coffee. Check out the link in our Instagram bio, and you can buy us some caffeinated drinks to keep us going.
Yeah, and we will see you next week for a very rounded episode.
Indeed. We'll see you then, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.